Welcome to Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio, brought to you by Visit Anderson, South Carolina, home of beautiful Lake Hartwell. The Rapala family of fishing products, including VMC hooks and 13 fishing rods, reels, and more. And the Bass Anglers Sportsman Society. Now, here's your host, lifetime BASS member, Tom Abraham.
Welcome to this week's episode of Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio. I am Tom Abraham, your guide for the next hour as we feature the Bassmaster Elite Series and those looking to get into that exclusive group through the St. Croix Bassmaster Open Series and the up-and-comers on the Strike King Bassmaster College Series and the tens of thousands of Bass Nation anglers around the country competing on the local level, all with a chance to advance to the big leagues of professional fishing. Now, the Bass Nation operates youth, high school, and college programs, including a Junior Bassmaster Championship, High School National Championship, College National Championship, and the College Bracket event, leading to a Bassmaster Classic berth. The Bass Nation is at the grassroots of who we are, and for more information about how to become a member or to start a Bass Nation club, visit Bassmaster.com and click on the Nation tab. Now, the best way to communicate with the show is to visit our Facebook fan page at facebook.com/bass or on Twitter at Bassmaster and use the hashtag Bass Radio. You can also listen to all the shows at bassmaster.com/radio or just hit the Nation tab at bassmaster.com and click on Bassmaster Radio. Our first cast segment of the show is brought to you by 13 Fishing, and we have a great deal for you right now. The Gerald Swindle Design Meta Series Rods and Inception G2 Reels are available at 13fishing.com along with all their other great products. And for a limited time, you can get 20% off your entire order by using the discount code BASSRADIO20. That's BASSRADIO20, only at 13fishing.com. Now, I fish these rods and reels myself and could not be happier. Get 20% off with the code BASSRADIO20. The Elites are back at it on St. Clair for a big smallmouth slugfest, and we'll have complete coverage of that next week. And at the same time, 481 boats descended upon Lake Hartwell for the high school national championship, and we'll have that for you next week as well. In the meantime, Jody White took the St. Clair Bassmaster Open on the St. Lawrence River last week. You got the trophy, you got the $50,000 in a river-only deal out of Waddington, and he is coming up in a few moments here in our Rapala Winner's Circle. JT Tompkins leads the Open's EQ standings with three tournaments to go, and we'll have him coming up today as well. Plus, Dennis Tumlin from the Tennessee Department of Tourism is coming up. Talk about that Bill Dance signature series of lakes in the Volunteer State. But first, Jody White joins us in the Rapala Winner's Circle. Jody, welcome to the show. Congratulations. How are you, man?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
So let's talk about this deal a little bit. River only out of Waddington. And first of all, your experience there, because it seems like you had a lot of history there on the river. And so you had some idea of the way you wanted to fish it.
I'd say I've got maybe a medium amount of history there. I've actually only fished four tournaments there now. Mm. One of them was as a co-angler in that Bass Open that Corey won a few years ago that was out of Clayton, where a lot of guys ran to the lake. I fished some local stuff, some ABA events, and then of course this Open, but really I didn't start fishing up there until a few years ago, and boy, I'm glad I did, because one, it's seems to suit me pretty well, I guess, and yeah, it's just a phenomenal fishery. I love it up there.
So you're out of Shasbury, Vermont. So you fished the one that Corey won as a co-angler, right? I mean, and you were the co-angler, yeah. The collegiate. You fished in college in 2016. You won the co-angler division for the Bassmaster Open on Smith Lake in a tournament I fished in as well. So you've kind of been sneaking up on this deal, but how cool is it to beat Corey Johnston, who is just an ATM machine when it comes to the St. Lawrence and Lake Ontario, in a deal that you fished, you know, just a few years ago as a co?
I mean, it's pretty incredible, but also really surprising. You know, the Johnstons, both Corey and Chris, have pretty much been unbeatable up there. And I went out the last day really assuming I was fishing for second and just trying to hold on, because I just assumed, you know, Corey was going to catch a big bag. And I guess it just sort of worked out that it was my time, because it's not what I would have expected going into the tournament. You know, those Corey and Chris, both of them are so good, so consistent, that nine times out of 10, they're going to put it all together all week long.
Now, this is the a perfect example of a local cherry picking, you know, it opens, right? Because you did not fish the first one in the division. Everybody knows you get a classic spot with a win in a St. Croix Bassmaster Open, but that you didn't get that, right? Because this is the only one that you're fishing open-wise this year.
Right, yeah, I've got a beautiful trophy, I've got a big check, but no classic spot. I'm not headed to Grand Lake, which, you know, obviously if you could do it all over again, you'd love to fish the first one, but, you know, it's scheduling's hard enough with just one or two tournaments, and when you try to throw in all three and they're all around, you know, it's sometimes makes a lot more sense just to fish the fish what comes up in front of you. I entered the tournament, you know, the first day I was allowed to. You know, I put my deposit in it back in the winter. Like, I had it on the calendar. I was going to go fish it. It wasn't like I got on the fish, you know, back in the spring and said, hey, I'm going to jackpot this. For that sort of reason, I just knew it was a big tournament, knew it was local, and knew I wanted to get in, and boy, it really worked out.
Well, what is the plan for Jody White? I mean, what is the thought process for you now that you've won a tournament like this, you know, with over 200 anglers on there and, of course, all the Open EQ guys and so on? You know that you can compete at this level. You've had some great success in your early tournament fishing. Is the thought process to try and get yourself to the elites at some point in time? Do you see yourself fishing more opens in the future to try and qualify? Will you be on an EQ list next year? What's the thought process for your career?
I think I'm just going to keep doing my regular job. It's a lot steadier paycheck than fishing tournaments. And, you know, I really love to fish tournaments, and I'll keep fishing some local stuff. And, you know, I wouldn't say no to fishing like three opens, like doing a whole division if the schedule really lines up some year. But I can't see myself traveling around the country to fish nine or to chase that. And really, honestly, I won this tournament. It's super cool, but I have spent enough time around top level anglers. I really don't believe I'm the caliber angler that, you know, can be successful all around the country super consistently. I'm a lot better at fishing up north than I am down south.
Well, you were super consistent for sure at the St. Lawrence River last week, 25-11 on day one, 22-10 on day two, and you were hovering. You were one fish away, basically a pound and a half or so away from Corey Johnston in those 2 days when Corey was leading the way, 23-10 on the final day. Talk to me about that ride in. Are you thinking, you know, 23-10, unless Corey had, you know, 22 and change, you know, I think I won this thing. What was your thought coming in?
You know, I knew I had a really good day, and I had a long run to ride in on and think about it. And I really, a buddy of mine, Brett Carnwright, told me almost the same thing that I was feeling. He said, like, you're coming in and you get to think about that you're in the position, right? Mm-hmm. You may not have won it, but you're in rarefied air. You have a chance to do what very, very few people ever have a chance to do. And it was around Ogdensburg, I started to feel it. You know, I started to sort of think that, not that I was going to win, but just I started to appreciate all the possibilities. Mm-hmm. And I came off playing in Waddington. I fished for just a little bit more, and then I came in like 10 minutes early, just to be sure.
Right.
And the first thing I did when I got off plane and check-in, I asked my marshal, I said, so what's the score? Did Corey catch him? And he said, do you really want to know? And I'm like, yeah, I really want to know. And he said, I think you won. And I didn't let myself believe it until Corey weighed his fish, because when I saw his fish in the bag, you know, the difference between a 20-pound bag of smallmouth and a 22.5-pound bag of smallmouth or 23 pounds, it's hard to tell just visually, at least for me. Mm-hmm. And I never really believed it until it actually happened. It was pretty amazing.
Yeah, Corey had 20 pounds, 8 ounces, which put him at 70 pounds and an ounce, which was just about almost 2 pounds less than you. And, you know, that's you go anywhere in the country, you get a 20-pound bag on championship day, you think you might have won the tournament, you know, but it's not that way in the St. Lawrence. It's a different deal. Of course, the lake was off limits, but it was a different deal. These fish are under such great pressure there at the St. Lawrence, but still, that's an amazing number. That's more more than any classic in a 3-day event. And, you know, if you're Corey Johnson, you come in with 20 and a half pounds, you think you probably hung on. I know for him, it sounded like a little bit of a frustrating day.
Yeah, I don't think he believed he'd hung on when he came in. And it's definitely that fishery, most northern fisheries, you know, you need to catch them really good every day if you're going to win. Especially in the Northeast, in New York, Champlain, St. Lawrence, the Great Lakes. And, you know, that one there, like, you needed to catch them every single day if you were going to win. And, like, whether it had been, you know, me or Corey, and Corey, I think he probably had the fish on to win. And, you know I had the fish on to have more weight. And, like, it was, it's one of those scenarios where you really can't have an off day at all up there because it's just so good.
Yeah, it absolutely was so good, and it was so good for Jody White as he got the win, winning over $50,000 in this tournament, and did his damage a number of different ways, drop shotting, throwing a little swim bait, and a man after my own heart went Carolina rig, went old school Carolina rig for a little while as well. Well, Jody, congratulations on the win. I really appreciate you doing you, man. I mean, you know, everybody usually when we talk to them, you know, their whole goal is to make it to the highest level, but you keep doing you, and congrats on the win, and hopefully we'll be talking to you again down the road. Who knows?
Hey, we'll see, and thanks for the time. I really appreciate it.
All right, thank you. That's Jody White in the Rapala Winner's Circle, and wow. I mean, that's a little bit of a different story than we usually get. I mean, usually these guys are all gung-ho and making a classic and making the elites, and, you know, he's totally satisfied with the way his fishing career is going and what his job is as well. All right, we get a break in here. When we come back, Dennis Tumlin will join us from the Tennessee Department of Tourism next on Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio, the Bassmaster Radio Network.
Welcome back to Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio. Now, here's your host, Tom Abraham.
And welcome back, Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio. And now I want to talk about something that we have introduced to you in the past. It's something we've known about for a couple of years, and it's really starting to kick into high gear now. It's the Bill Dance Signature Lakes in my home state of Tennessee. I actually live on one of these lakes at Tim's Ford Lake, which is right near the border, the Alabama border. And this is a great undertaking in a state that is really kind of the epicenter of bass fishing for years and years. And of course, there isn't a name out there that you associate with professional bass fishing more than Bill Dance. And then he has taught so many fishermen how to fish, and with all of his programs that he has done over the years, for sure. Joining us now is Dennis Tumlin. He handles economic and development for the state of Tennessee and the Department of Tourism there, special projects, including this very special project. And Dennis joins us now on a VMC hook. Dennis, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, I'm wonderful, Tom. Thanks for having us on.
Well, I appreciate you joining us here. And just to kind of an overview of where did this all come from? I mean, what was the genesis of this whole project?
You know, back during COVID, we saw a mad rush to the outdoors and folks just getting outside and recreating. And we saw a lot of folks going into our rural communities and enjoying the lakes and rivers and streams. And this idea of honoring a great Tennessean, honoring Bill Dance, had been around for several years, and due to budget restraints and so forth, it had never came to fruition. And we really used the COVID bump, as we call it, as a catalyst to bring this back off the shelf and dust it off and to honor Bill Dance, who many of you may know. He lives in Collierville, Tennessee. He wears that iconic Tennessee cap, and the idea had been around for a while, but we used the COVID bump as a genesis to get it back off the shelf and to help create a better scenario for folks to come to our rural communities. Many of these are in rural communities and recreate, enjoy all the fishing that Tennessee has, and to make some really special lakes and some bodies of water intensively managed for fishing and a great experience.
So how did you determine which lakes would be a part of the Signature Series, and could the signature series grow. I mean, you've got you got the three sections of the state, of course, Chickamauga, Douglas Lake, Norris Lake, and Watauga Lake in the eastern part. Central lakes are Dale Hollow, Falls Creek, Falls Lake, Kentucky Lake, Old Hickory Lake, and Timms Ford. And then in the western part of the state, Browns Creek Lake, Herb Parsons Lake, Lake Halford, Pickwick, and Realfoot. So how did you determine which ones would be Bill Dance signature lakes?
Well, I'll start with saying this is a multi-state agency collaborative effort. So Tennessee Department of Tourist Development is at the table, Tennessee Wildlife Resources Agency at the table, Tennessee Department of Economic, Tennessee Department of Environment and Conservation, Tennessee State Parks, and Governor Bill Lee's office are all at the table. And so we brought a group of what we're calling the Stakeholder Steering Committee. We formed a steering committee with about 13 people of those agencies, and we looked at every body of water across the state. And we did this during the COVID downturn. I mentioned earlier we use this as an opportunity to bring this to life. But during COVID, we were having these meetings and evaluating these bodies of water and looking for what bodies of water had the opportunity to create a uniquely Tennessee experience. And we left a lot of that up to the experts at TWRA of which bodies of water can carry and produce, in some cases, trophy fish. In some cases, we're like a Fall Creek Falls, we're looking for a great family-friendly fishing experience with catfish and bluegill. So we looked at the geography and then looked at the carrying capacity. And then you take a Dale Hollow that's just got the iconic world-renowned lure, lure of Dale Hollow and the smallmouth world record bass, and run it through the steering committee, and we came out with, in phase one, there's 14 lakes, and we have four more in the hopper that will roll out in about the next 24 months that will be ready. We're working hard under the water in those additional four lakes, and so we do see brand extensions in the coming years.
And what is the, you know, what does it mean to be a Bill Dance signature lake? What is the commitment from the state in terms of improving habitat, improving ramps, things like that? Talk a little bit about that.
When we first approached Bill Dance about this legacy honoring project that the state wanted to take on to honor the legacy of Bill, Bill was very clear to us and said, if this is just a marketing ploy, I'm not interested. Now, if you guys want to get under the water and do some intensive fisheries management and manage these fisheries to the best, we're going to call them world-class standards, to the best that they can be managed. If you're into that type of management, I'm all about partnering with you on this project. So our commitment, the commitment from TWRA, starts with under the water. With habitat restoration, in the last 12 months, we have put hundreds and hundreds of man-made structures in these lakes, and we have already stocked an additional 9 million fish in these 14 lakes in the last 12 months. Many of those are forage fish. The commitment to us began under the water, and then the commitment also is above the water. A great launch ramp, really well done, courtesy dock, so we're in the process of bidding and going through. Some docks have already been placed, but courtesy docks, well done, brand new aluminum floating courtesy dock. Certain cases we'll see bathroom improvements and parking lot improvements. So there is above the water and below the water, but everything began under the water with this program.
Well, we need some of those floating docks at Timms Ford Lake. I can tell you right now, it's a pretty big tournament. So you get a couple of hundred boats, and there's like two spots to park a boat. And it's
it's coming. It's coming, Tom. I'm telling you, I've been there several times at Winchester City Park, and the ramp's going to get a brand new upgrade and new fishing pier. That old wooden one's coming out, brand new aluminum floating fishing pier, and some courtesy docks, and got it in the pipeline, brother.
Yeah, that is exciting news to hear, that's for sure. And it's really cool to hear that Bill is very involved in all of this as well. Obviously, he's fished all of these waters. And, it's something that he has a heart for, not only the big reservoirs. We've got Tennessee River reservoirs here. We got Elk River reservoirs here. But we also have these little lakes like Herb Parsons and some of these other small little bodies of water. And then, of course, the one real true natural lake in all of Tennessee, Realfoot Lake. And so there's a little bit of everything here on the Bill Dance signature lakes.
Well, that was by design for sure. You know, we wanted to create uniquely different experiences, family-friendly experiences at Tennessee State Parks and some of the TWRA managed lakes, and then we've got the large reservoirs to be intensively managed for a different experience, and all the way up to Watauga, you know, the southernmost range of the lake trout. You can come and experience a Bill Dance signature lakes and actually catch a lake trout in Tennessee. So, a little bit by design to create those uniquely different experiences. So our goal is to inspire you to visit all 14 of the Bill Dance signature lakes and try the different experiences and take your family and friends and visit some communities across Tennessee.
It was really cool to see, you know, the Bassmaster Classic, back in Tennessee and what that was like and the incredible turnout. That's all you have to do is to see that to know how Tennesseans love their bass fishing.
That was fun. We launched the Bill Dance Signature Lakes Project. That's the Bassmaster Classic in Knoxville. Felt like we caught lightning in a bottle with Bill Dance at our booth in Tennessee, in Knoxville, Tennessee, and 160,000 or so fans that came through the exhibit, record-setting exhibit. And, we felt like we caught lightning in a bottle to launch this project there.
Isn't it cool to see? I saw Bill there at the Classic. And isn't it cool to see the young people, the kids? They know Bill Dance. It's like, we know Bill Dance. If you're my age, if you're 60 years old, you grew up with all his shows and the blooper reels and all that kind of stuff. I kind of missed the peak of his tournament fishing career. But it's crazy to see how many young people, they know that's Bill Dance.
The line from our booth was over 3 hours long, and we had to cut it off because of time commitments. And I'll tell you, Bill stayed an hour and a half after the expo closed to make sure everyone that was at the end of that line, when we cut it off, the expo hall was completely empty except for our line leading to Bill Dance, and he stayed and spoke to everyone. And there were we were laughing. There were some folks, actually younger folks, brought to tears. Mm-hmm. We had pictures of a young lady crying when Bill signed her autograph and spoke to her, and just the memories that she had with her dad and watching Bill Dance as a, what it meant to her. So he's truly a legend and worthy of this legacy honoring project at the state of Tennessee. We can't be more thankful than for Governor Bill Lee's office and all the partnering agencies to help make this possible. It's multiple millions of dollars, I think. We're probably north of $18 million right now committed to bringing this to life. And I just left 2 days of planning meetings at Pickwick Landing State Park the last 2 days. And Bill Dance's Signature Lakes was a key topic of those meetings with all those stakeholders. So the train is on the tracks and it's moving. And we're so excited to bringing it to life.
Tremendous stuff. Dennis Tumlin has been our guest. Dennis, I appreciate you so much. Great work on this, and I can't wait to make the tour. I'm going to hit some of these lakes that I haven't hit yet. It's going to be great stuff.
Well, let's do it. If you want to go visit the website, it's BillDanceSignatureLakes.com. We have a website up and live, and you can take a look for yourself.
Thanks, Dennis.
Thanks, Tom. See you, buddy.
Dennis Tumlin.
Welcome back to Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio. Now, here's your host, Tom Abraham.
And welcome back, Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio. And now this segment of the show is brought to you by the fine folks at Lake Hartwell, where, 418 boats showed up, or was it 481 boats? I don't know. It was some ridiculous number of boats that showed up for the high school national championship. I think it's 481 boats that showed up for the high school national championship at Hartwell. And good thing it's in Anderson, South Carolina, because those folks there know how to take care of people. And I'll tell you what, they had a blast out there. We'll have a full report on that event last week. It was a 3-tournament deal. And if you're going to put 480 boats on a lake, it might as well be Hartwell, because that thing fishes big. And I'm sure they used every corner of it for sure. All right, 3 events to go in the St. Croix Bassmaster Open Series. And leading the EQ's Angler of the Year standings is JT Tompkins. And he is having one heck of a year. To be honest with you, I don't know how his lead isn't bigger. I haven't gone back and done the math, but I don't know how his lead isn't bigger. But he joins us now in a VMC hook. JT, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing awesome. How about you?
How about 481 boats at Hartwell, right? I mean, you've had some experience at Hartwell, I would imagine, over the years and in the college angling and everything else. I mean, they're using up every corner of that lake.
Oh, yeah. I love that place. I've fished a few bass opens there. I live pretty close to there. Yeah. And if there's any place that can swallow them up, it's probably, Hartwell. You got like 60-mile-long rivers. that you can run up, or you could fish the main lake from the dam all the way to the takeoff, and all of it produces. So definitely can handle it, but that is an insane amount of boats on one body, especially during the summertime. There's already a couple thousand boats out there just partying, so I can only imagine how many boats are going to be out there on a day like tomorrow, like total.
I'm just glad I'm not emceeing the weigh-in. How long does it take to weigh in 481 boats? I mean, you're talking about teams and everything else. That weigh-in has got to be a six-hour weigh-in. I mean, it's just absolutely nuts. But you're right about the lake. I mean, Hartwell, you're a South Carolina guy, but the Hartwell is, they're just getting bigger and bigger. We keep seeing one-day tournaments, 123 pounds, 24 pounds. And it's a mix, you know. It's not just a spotted bass lake. It's the largemouth there are outstanding as well. And I think that with the advent, you know, of the forward facing sonar, you know, guys are doing a better job than ever in terms of chasing them in the open water.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, one thing we haven't seen play there that I'm sure is going to play is, you know, people are going to be catching on timber over 100 foot of water. So the lake's actually going to do nothing but get bigger, not in terms of like shoreline miles, but like ability to fish different areas of the lake. Like we're seeing on Lake Lanier, people are catching them in the center of the lake near no contours over just middle of timber. So you could possibly see that happen this tournament, just out of pressure pushing those fish further offshore. So definitely shouldn't be no shortage of water there, but it can definitely get frustrating having to deal with that many boats as well. So I can see both ways.
So you were seventh at out of Waddington at the St. Lawrence River. This is a river tournament, and we heard Corey Johnston say that these fish are acting different now. I mean, you're talking about pressure. There's a lot of pressure on the St. Lawrence River. I mean, it's Disney World, you know, for smallmouth bass fishing. There's no doubt about it. But just talk a little bit about how you did what you did. It was your best finish of the Opens. We'll get into the rest of the tournaments because you have been absolutely on fire. But the seventh place at Waddington, and which allowed you to kind of go out and have some fun on day three on Championship Saturday to, you know, to try and move up a little bit into points.
Absolutely. Like, I spent a lot of time on the St. Lawrence River, you know, over the last few years. I like to spend a lot of my summer there. And usually every summer by this time of year, they're already offshore, the deepest they're going to go, and they're already starting school up really good. And I think what Corey Johnson was talking about was, like, number one, a lot of the fish, you know, we've kind of exposed the whole entire, you know, sight fishing for smallmouth. So all those, you know, shallow smallmouth were so tough to catch in the first place. I know, like, the Johnsons love to fish shallow. And then also I noticed that the fish that should have been offshore weren't. Like, they weren't offshore where they normally are, and they weren't grouped up as big as they were. And I think those two combinations just made every fish in every range just tougher to catch in general, because the deeper fish didn't have enough competition, and the shallow fish have been hammered all, you know, spring long with a flogger and stuff. So that's what I think he was talking about when it comes to the toughness of everything. Was the fish weren't quite where they should have been, number one, and then they already beat up over the entire summer. So it was definitely a different fishing than anything I've ever seen so far.
The flogger. You know, for the listeners that don't know what a flogger is, it looks like a road cone, basically, is what it looks like. And it's something that, in a way, it has an old-school feel to it. With all the electronics and everything else we got, this is something where it's like a big set of binoculars almost, where you can just drop it in the water and look down there. And in that gin-clear water, you know, you could see everything. Now, are you a flogger guy? Were you rocking a flogger during this tournament?
No, I stay away from the flogger this tournament. I have definitely spent a lot of time with a flogger in my hand. I feel confident with a flogger in my hand if I can get to do it. But I just knew that the amount of time I would spend with a flogger in my hands would probably not equate to enough, you know, fish as if I would have just looked for schools. Because I feel like I'm more of a consistent angler. I should have looked for schools. Like, if I was going for the win, I probably would have looked for three or four flogger fish for the first day. But I just knew I needed more time to look for schools, especially with it changing every single day and more fish coming. I needed every single day to go check new deep spots that they were coming to and not leaving. Because I always like to fish for fish that are coming to me and not leaving me. So I did not. but I could definitely see where it could have played for someone who's very experienced and knows that time of year a little bit better.
You know, some people think those things should be illegal. I grew up north in the Finger Lakes and fishing a lot in the Thousand Islands and in that clear water. It wasn't as clear as it is now. I mean, you know, the gobies and everything else, the water is just so clear up there in the Great Lakes. The zebra mussels really filtering that water, so it's become a totally different world. But having said that, forward-facing sonar is getting a lot of heat as well from a lot of people. Now, you're one of the young guys out there. You're really good with your electronics. But what's your take on that? I mean, is it going to eventually hurt the habitat? And do you think that it's do you think there's no problem with it in terms of being able to use it on the pro tours?
It's hard to say. I mean, I use my Panops a lot, but I even fished for three years without it, previously. And you know, my standings before Panops just even come out were pretty solid. So I wouldn't mind seeing it go either way, whether they take it away or leave it. I mean, in my opinion, I think it's another tool. And, you know, I think the more tools you add to a sport or more obstacles you add, it takes more skill to be able to learn those. It's just more areas of the game that you have to dedicate time to learn.
Yeah.
Now, my view could be wrong. You know, that's possible, but I think it allows for people to become more dominant. I'll say that. And because certain people, they're going to dedicate all their time to fishing and they're going to learn every aspect of the game. And that's really what I like to do. I spend a lot of time on the water. I spend a lot of time learning. And I really love the fact that there's another thing to learn that I could separate myself from a lot of other anglers.
Well,
so in that aspect, I really like it. But, you know, that's how I view it. I view it as another thing that I can learn and I could separate myself from others that don't spend as much time doing a certain thing. But do I think it's ruining the sport? Personally, I don't, because, I mean, there's so many other, you know, there's so many ways to catch fish, and adding another one is just, it's just going to separate the field, become more competitive, and it's going to open up these fisheries to a whole new way of catching fish. And even I personally think it's going to actually take pressure off of a lot of fish.
Yeah.
Like a lot of the shallow fish, you know, we're not going up to these same areas and beating the same fish up year after year after year after year. Every single year we're actually learning. It's learning how to catch new fish that we've never seen before. So I actually think it's taking pressure off of fish.
Yeah, I agree with it, and that's what my hope is. I'm hoping that all those offshore guys will push those fish back to the bank, and because I like the power fish and fish shallow like that. But don't feel bad when people talk about the electronics. In the 80s, I had a fish flasher on my boat that had colors on it, you know what I mean? And it had the different colors, and if it was red, that meant the bottom was hard, and if it was green, that meant that it was softer, you were in the weeds and that kind of stuff. And my dad used to look over my shoulder, and he'd say, "What are you doing up there?" I said, "I'm looking at the flasher." That's cheating. And he didn't like, you know, the hummingbird fish finder that I had on the bow of the boat then. So it's just, you know, it's evolution. This has been going on forever. People have been talking about electronics forever.
Exactly. And I don't know, like personally, I don't really like, Panoptix. I use it in tournaments because I feel like it's a competitive edge for me. But if you look at all my tournaments that I thrive and do well in, typically, it's usually shallow water fisheries that are either rivers or I'm up shallow and 2 foot of water fishing. So
nice. Yeah.
Really a power. I'm a power fisherman at heart, but I definitely do love to get out there and live scope and stuff like that. So, I mean, either way it goes, I'm just ready to see what, you know, happens in the industry. I'm always looking forward to the next thing. And I'm just trying to be the first one to hop on the new thing. That way I don't fall behind. I'd rather stay ahead of the curve.
Yeah, JT Tompkins with us here. He is leading the Angler of the Year standings with 3 tournaments to go. We're going to have more with him in just a moment, but 3 opens to go, and he is sitting in a great, great position to become an elite angler for the upcoming year. We'll come back with more with JT Tompkins next. This is Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio on the Bassmaster Radio Network.
Welcome back to Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio. Now, here's your host, Tom Abraham.
And welcome back to Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio. We visit with South Carolina's JT Tompkins. He is the leader with 3 events to go in the St. Croix Bassmaster Opens as he tries to become an Elite Series angler. And JT, let's just talk a little bit about the year, because this is nuts. You were seventh. That was your best finish of the year. Your worst finish of the year was all the way back at Eufaula in Alabama, Eufaula, at 48th. And again, these tournaments, 225 pros generally fish in these tournaments. Then 24th, 32nd, 8th at Bugs Island, 11th in Decatur at Wheeler, 14th at Eufaula, and now 7th at Waddington. I mean, this is nuts, man. I mean, these last four tournaments to be top 15. You've been fishing these Opens for a few years. You know how difficult it is. You're not having any busts on this season. You know, in past years, it seemed like, you know, you had a lot of good finishes. You had to win last year, but there would be one really bad finish. You haven't had that this year, and it's been a magical year for you.
Absolutely. You know, in this field, it's so hard to, you know, you have 225 boats and typically you have 30 locals who are the best locals on the lake trying to, you know, go for the win. And then you got, you know, FLW guys trying to make it over to Bass that, you know, decided to come over to Bass. And those guys have been phenomenal anglers. And then you also got all the hungry new guys in the Opens that are trying to make it to elite. So you got three of the best different, you got three different types of anglers, and they're all the best in their divisions, and you put them all in one field and 225 guys, and that's what you're competing against. So definitely is, you know, one of the toughest fields out there. And for me to have the kind of year that I'm having, it's just big thanks to everyone around me, you know, and it's just been a phenomenal year so far. And I'm trying not to bomb, but these tournaments are super tough not to. I've had a bomb every single year that's kept me out of the elites. I've missed by one spot each year, and each year I can always look back to one tournament. And, you know, that's what I'm going to try to avoid for these next three. You know, the good thing is we have 9 events this year to qualify for the elite. So you can afford a bomb if you have some really good events. So I definitely enjoy the new format, and I'm hoping I can take advantage of it in these next three events. And, you know, we'll see how the rest of the year goes.
You got a 7-point lead on Kenta Kimura, but he's already an elite, you know. He's just out there having a good time, right? So you got a 20-point lead on John Garrett. You're looking at the top 10, the top 9 make it, but we got to take Kenta Kimura out of there because he's already there. Do you do the math? Do you look at it and you say, well, 979 points. Those are the guys that are tied right now at 10th and 11th, Brett Cannon and Jacob Bigelow. And, you know, so you've got about a 110-point lead on those guys. Do you sit there and try to do the math? This is where I got to finish each one. Or do you just go out there and just try to keep making, you know, top 15s?
Oh, yeah. I for sure look at the numbers like crazy. I probably look at numbers a bunch of times. I've done the math, you know, just for my peace of mind personally. It doesn't affect, you know, what I do, because at the end of the day, I'm going to be against fish, and I just got to go out there and catch as much as I can catch. What everybody else catches means nothing, is because if I do my job, that's all I need to do. So that's the way I'm trying to look at it, but I always do love looking at the points. I like knowing what it takes, and I've definitely looked at the points and calculated it all out and thought about it a lot, but I probably shouldn't. I probably should just go out there and do what I've been doing the last, you know, 6 tournaments and just try to keep doing it and, you know, don't let it get in my head. But that's kind of a tough thing to do, is to not let something get in your head. So
if you battle to stay in that one spot, you know, at worst you fall a few spots, you're still going to make the elites. That's the number one deal. Or is that angler of the year deal, is that really something that's very important to you now? I mean, you got 3 to go. I mean, maybe you think about it more when you get to the final tournament, but are you focused on just making the elites, or is that AOI in the open something that you really want?
You know, I've always listened to this one saying, if you shoot for the stars, you'll land on the moon.
There you go.
And so if I shoot for the number one spot, you know, maybe if I miss my mark, I'll fall in the elites. So right now I'm going to shoot for number one. I'm going to practice every single tournament to the furthest of my abilities, and I'm going to work my butt off all year for a number one spot. And that's what I'm going to shoot for all year. I wanted that number one spot. And if I don't make it, you know what, hopefully I'll still make the elites. So that's what I'm going to do the rest of the year. I'm going to shoot for, you know, Angler of the Year. That's a really big accomplishment and something I've been looking after for the last few years. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to work as hard as I can to do that, and we'll see how the cards fall if that doesn't happen. And hopefully another goal that I have will be accomplished in not making it. So we'll see.
Yeah, JT Tompkins with us here, leader in the points in the AOI standings for the Opens. All right, so three to go to finish this stretch run off. When you look at it, any experience at all? Watts Bar, not a lot of guys have fished. I mean, there's been a ton of tournaments with Bassmaster at Watts Bar, but you got Watts Bar, Lake of the Ozarks, and then finishing up at the Harris Chain. I'll be fishing that one at the Harris Chain down there in Florida, but this is a different time of year. Normally we go to Florida in January. This will be October 12th through the 14th at the Harris Chain. What's your thought on these three bodies of water that are coming up?
Absolutely. So our next one is Watts Bar, and it's going to be mid-September. And I think that's going to be a super, super tough event. And, you know, I grew up on a super tough body of water, and I really enjoy the tough fisheries. I've never had any time there, but I'm going to be spending 2 weeks there in the next, you know, week or two before cutoff. And I'm going to go there and I'm going to learn the fishery as best I can to hopefully set me up in the best position for that tournament. And then we have the Ozarks right after that. It's back-to-back tournaments. And I've already spent a lot of time there, you know, this year, you know, prepping for that tournament. And we'll see how that one goes. I'm super excited about that one. I'm actually looking forward to that one a lot. I like the way it sets up for me. And we'll see how it goes. I think it's going to be a good event overall, good weight. I think it's going to be a fun tournament, a lot of fish catches. So, you know, that one's – Watts Bar is going to be the main toss-up. I'm kind of excited about the Ozarks. And then Harris Chain. I've probably spent more time on Harris Chain than any other Florida lakes.
Really?
You know, I've ended up having – I've won a Toyota Series over there when I was 19 years old. And so I ended up getting a lot of experience from that. I've scanned a lot there. I feel like I understand the fishery pretty good. And I'm also going to spend a lot of time there before cutoff as well. So hopefully with a lot of my pre-practicing and stuff like that, I can put enough experience on all these fisheries that I can, you know, not bomb, you know, maybe not do great, but not bomb and just make sure I'm safe for those tournaments. But no, I think Watts Bar is definitely the biggest wild card out of all of them with it being so tough. It's hard to learn something when you're not getting a lot of bites.
Have you fished the Harris Chain at that time of year though, in October? I mean, because it always seems to be winter where everybody goes there in January and February.
I have not fished at that time of year, but I think those fish kind of set up the same multiple different times of the year. Like, as soon as they come off the bed, I won, you know, middle of March when they were coming off the beds, getting on the shell bars and stuff like that. And I think it's going to actually set up the same, just reverse. They're going to be probably pre-spawn on the same stuff. So hopefully it's going to relate a lot to the same ways. It's I'm assuming I'm going to spend a lot of my time offshore, whether it be grass, shell, you know, any sort of offshore structure, and hopefully a lot of my experience from the past scanning and stuff puts me in a good position to, you know, capitalize on a lot of that.
Yeah. Well, it's not like they got a lot of places to go to there, right? I mean, it's not, it's all pretty much the same. Yeah, that's good stuff. Yeah, so. JT Tompkins with us here. All right, finally, it's right there. I mean, you fished the Classic last year, finished in the middle of the pack there, so you kind of get a little taste of the big, big time. Nothing bigger than a Bassmaster Classic. But do you start planning, I mean, sponsors, and start communicating with people and start talking like, you know what, I think I'm going to be on the Elite Tour next year? I mean, it's a little bit different animal. Or are you trying to ignore all of that?
Well, you know, I'm trying to ignore it, but at the same time, you don't want to be caught red-handed and, you know, have to, because it's a lot of money to get out there and do, to get out there on the Elites, and you don't want to be caught red-handed and have a lot of money sitting at the end of the year that you, you know, need to worry about. So I've definitely, you know, hinted at a few things, made a few calls, just kind of, you know, setting up a few things that I'm not just diving into the whole sponsorship thing. I'm still staying on track. I'm still trying to do the best that I can. But I'm also making sure that I don't get caught red-handed, that if I do make it, that I don't have any sponsors, and I'm going out there and I'm going to be, you know, struggling for that side of it.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to keep myself balanced in that way, not get too deep into it, but also not be completely unprepared. So I'm just trying to balance a lot of stuff at the moment, while also making sure that my fishing side is not suffering any.
There you go. JT Tompkins has been our guest. JT, I appreciate you so much. Good luck the rest of the way. I got a feeling we're going to be talking more down the road.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate this opportunity so much.
All right, thank you. That's JT Tompkins. And I'll tell you what, that kid catches him. He catches him. I got a lot of confidence in what he's doing, and I think he's going to be fine. He's going to make it. I mean, he's going to be on the Elites. We'll be talking about him next year at the Elites, and I think he's going to do a tremendous job. Well, as we put the Bassmaster Radio Phoenix back on the trailer, let's remind you that we will have complete coverage of the Elite event that took place this week, and we'll have that next week for you with all the top three finishers in that event, plus a report on the high school national championship from Lake Hartwell. And remember, if you missed any of this week's show, it's always just a click away at bassmaster.com/radio, or visit the SportsMap Radio podcast page at sportsmapradio.com/podcasts. So until next time, keep those lines tight and nets heavy. I'm Tom Abraham, and this has been Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio on the Bassmaster Radio Network.